accession number 22362, reel 6.
Elaine Cheverton, reel 6. Yes, you were saying you went over on with the second door sets. And this, of course, would have been part of the occupation by this
That's
time,
right,
wouldn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it was the Army of Occupation. And I think the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders were also, or some units of the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders, because I can remember one evening hearing two young subalterns saying, "We should have gone in with all guns blazing," or something. And I thought, oh, they're really living a part of the war. And there was a lot of hostility. And anyway, they were talking about the English way back in 1715 or whatever it was. A real feeling about it. We should have stopped them then, and we should have, you know. And you say that could have been the only enemy, but it's the old enemy still lingers.
How many were you in the Wasby team?
I think there were 6.
And was that just the one team?
Well, no, there must have been more, because we were posted with the second Dorsets to Matsui, the North Island, and there was certainly one in what's the name of the, where would we have landed in Japan?
Oh, it would have been in Honshu, I would think,
yes,
the main island.
Yes,
would it?
Whatever the
Yokohama.
Yeah. That doesn't quite ring a bell, but
Nagasaki, no.
Probably tell us in the book. But anyway, yeah. We landed, and we were billeted in what had been ex-Japanese naval quarters on the main Japanese, and then we were sent to Matsui. We went by truck. We ran a static canteen for them, which was again rather like it had been in Rangoon, where they had a big hall, and we provided tea and cakes and games and sing songs and things.
What was your impression of Japan when you landed and travelled up to Matsui?
I think my main feeling was the difference between the men and the women, in that the women were used to being told what to do, and the whole what one got to know the Japanese way of life seemed to be very much two nations, I think, and one it was I felt very sympathetic towards the women, because one of them said to us, I think there must have been the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders, sort of looking at these great big men and sort of saying, how did we ever come to fight them, you know, sort of more or less that it was a foregone in a way that was face saving for them. These were the people who'd beaten them, and they were sort of superior race. But it's the old thing. You can't. One felt so bitter and angry towards the Japanese, and yet there were sort of many things which one felt, that they weren't the monsters that one had fought against, and they had, of course, had the bomb dropped. In the meantime, we were in a Japanese house up in Matsue was the place where the rich Japanese used to go for their summers, because it was a bit cooler and they'd have these beautiful big houses within the wall and closing the inevitable pond and so on, little lake in the middle. And so we were in one of these beautiful things, and we had two Japanese girls who were to do all the cleaning and looking after us, and a Japanese interpreter who came around each morning to say we didn't finish till about 10, half past 10 in the evening, and what did we want, to order for a meal. And the Japanese interpreter with the man who was going to cook for us, who spoke no English, and I was trying to describe. I was going to have soup and crouton, you see, and I was saying bits of bread cut into little pieces. And they say, so as done in butter, and as the interpreter was explaining it to the man, he said, "Oh, crouton," and he'd worked in a French restaurant in Tokyo, so we conversed in kitchen French after that. But you see, the girls, I said to the interpreter, the girls would be ready to greet us and bend down and take our shoes off and all that. And I said, and we weren't getting back until about 10:30 at night. And I said to him, the girls don't need to wait for us. And so there was a great sort of chattering going on between all three of them, and he said they would be very upset not to. This is their job, this is their role, to greet them, the owners, when they come back at night, however late it is. So we let it go on, but it was not what we wanted.
You from what you're saying, you weren't regarding them as enemy.
No. No, I mean, that would have been I don't think that occurred to us, really. I suppose it's the same the world over, really. It's the looking at them and thinking, well, they're perfectly ordinary feeling with people with perfectly ordinary feelings, and how come we ever got into a war?
Did you have any idea what their war had been like, on the home front, in terms of food supply or bombing, or fear of what the invasion would be, the occupation would be? Did you get any sort of impression?
No, I think the main feeling was that the Japanese were unbeatable, that they were there fighting for the emperor, and they would die and not surrender, and they would win. And so that I think that the civilian population of Japan couldn't really believe that the war, that they'd capitulated. And all the shame, because of that cultural aspect, all the shame they felt about it. And perhaps then the need to feel that the Japanese had been beaten by an understandable win, because they shouldn't have taken us on in the first place, in a sense. Why? They had to find ways of saving face, I think. But I think it came as a complete shock to the, because the propaganda to the Japanese population, because the propaganda had all been geared to the fact that Japan was winning and was going to win. So I think they were in a state of shock.
What were the Dorsets doing? Did you have any idea in Matsui?
I don't know. I think they weren't, they were there as the army of occupation, to be seen as the conquerors, but I think it would have been largely a matter of sort of routine drills and route marches, and I don't know whether there was any effort to have anybody come and talk to them about the war or the Japanese or anything like that. And we just provided the social bit.
And the social bit was just for the Dorsets, was it?
Yes, because we were attached to them.
And again, were they grateful? You know, like as they had been in Burma, the troops had been in Burma. Did you get the same reaction from the Dorsets, that there were English women there, British women there?
Yes, I think so, but there wasn't the element that there was while the war was on, that we were in danger or were giving up a lot to be there. We were just, you know, the war was won, we were the winners, and the WASPs were just part of that easing up of living that once the war had finished.
Yes, so it's sort of like that, the sort of dramatic input.
That's right,
of
yes,
having
yes,
women at the
that's
front.
That's right, yes.
Yes.
And the men themselves weren't under any, I mean, there were the things about it being boring and being bad about being, for them, about being away from home, but not, they weren't being called on to sort of face up to anything dangerous.
One tends to think of the army of occupation as being American, but you know, it's interesting that there were British troops there. Were there other nationalities as well?
Yes, there was New Zealanders and Australians, but the Americans had got there first because we were reliant on a very few troop ships and so on, so that the Americans, in a sense, had staked first claim, and as I say, they were much more pampered than any of the other troops were, and they were having their ice cream and chicken flown in, and not, you know, behaving as though if they had to put up with our conditions, they'd have mutinied, you know. So again, there was these divisions of feeling. I think that there was this feeling that the American troops had taken over and were having, and they didn't, and they weren't out as long. They didn't stay for, you know, they weren't going to be there for however long the occupation bit took. They were only out for a few months and then went back again.
Were you able to travel around at all from Matsui to see the surrounding countryside and the villages and towns?
Yes, we were, and when we were coming back from Matsui to back to base in Japan itself, there were four of us, I think. Yes, there were four of us in that Dorset's canteen. I may have said five or six, but there were, as that canteen was only four of us. And we had a British driver and a 1,500 weight army truck. And it was a long journey going through Hiroshima. And the driver got lost fairly early on in the journey, and we had to stop at the village and try and you know, with them not speaking English and us not speaking Japanese, he was trying to work out where we should go, and the Japanese man said, I'll come in and show you to the nearest, and then we stayed in the truck for about 8 or 10 miles to put us on the right route. And then when it was, because it had all been delayed, we reached Hiroshima just about as it was just beginning to get dusk. And we started to drive across this huge bridge, only to find that it finished halfway. The rest of the bridge had been destroyed. So there was a nasty feeling of being in this absolute no man's land of devastation and finding our way back to port.
What was the scene you saw in Hiroshima?
It was just rubble as far as the eye could see. There were a few bits of concrete buildings with arm work, which was sort of twisted as though a child had just twisted it. And you couldn't believe that there was anything that could create that. You know, as far as the eye could see, as I say, it was not just a sort of bomb crater, it was unbelievable, really. And, you know, when you thought about the deaths, it is an area which I do find very difficult because, you know, I think it is generally accepted that it helped finish the war more quickly, but I think the Japanese were already on the run, as it were, and I don't feel it. I don't feel it was something that we, when they talk about getting the Japanese to apologize for the war, I always feel we ought to apologize for Hiroshima. And we haven't done.
Was there something about the air as well? Did it? Was the atmosphere different there?
Well, it sort of felt such. It wasn't spooky exactly, but it was just a sort of dead town. It wasn't a human habitation any longer. And one sort of felt aware of, at least I did, aware of what it must have been like. And it was at breakfast time and they were all getting ready to go to work and having their breakfasts and so on, and then suddenly it's difficult to get one's head round, I think, if you hadn't actually seen it. The impact of it, I got photographs somewhere, but it's actually being there and sort of feeling what the place must have been like and how within a few seconds it could be so devastated.
And the bridge, you know, just stopping.
Just stopping in the middle, and as we say, it was getting late, we had a long journey, and then sort of suddenly seeing that this great broad bridge couldn't go any further. It's a turn round, and I'm thankful that it wasn't.
Were there any people about at all?
There were one or two who were sort of, you know, shuffling through the rubble, but only just, I don't suppose, I saw more than half a dozen people there.
Because this was fairly soon after.
It was fairly
after,
soon after,
it?
Yes.
Yes.
This was March, and the bomb had been dropped in August, hadn't it?
Did you know anything about radiation then?
No, I mean, I don't think much was known about it because, you know, now we know that radioactive waste will be. Well, and was for the Japanese who survived. So that, you know, when we were sort of walking through the rubble, we were stirring up dust that had been irradiated. Still, as I say, got to 82, so it can't have done a great deal of damage individually, but.
Did you actually walk about?
Yes. Because we had you know, somebody with us who was, I think that was the second visit, the woman who wrote the Wasby book, and she was looking for sort of things that would be, as a journalist's point of view, sort of interest, and she picked up a gramophone record of Who's Sorry Now or something, all burnt round the edges, but the little bit in the label had somehow escaped being burnt. So we were sort of, you know, looking for things in the rubble for her. And I brought a piece of it back with me.
Just a piece of the rubble?
Just a piece of the rubble. I chucked it out a long time ago before I decided it wasn't something I wanted to keep, but, you know, we were...
Could you see the castle at all? Was there anything left of the castle?
There was only a couple of modern buildings, I think, that were... Was the castle old? There were only a couple of modern buildings that had got concrete and metal.
So it was possible to see the whole of the city, wasn't
it? Yes, absolutely flat.
What colour was it?
My feeling was that it was sort of red brick. It was just bricks. Probably not red brick, but that's my impression of it.
Could you see where roads had been?
To a certain extent, but the rubble had sort of blown over them. It was quite... I was trying to think how we got back from the bridge. We must have found some road that had been cleared.
And the river, was the river clear?
Yes. The river's big at that point. A wide river. But there was no vegetation, no anything. It was just like a child with a box of bricks. You know, just... Yes, I got some photographs. I don't know what I've done with them. I looked for them the other day and couldn't find them. It was such a wide area. I mean, that was the incredible thing. One knew about bombs and bomb craters, but this was just a whole city that was flat. Yeah.
And you visited the city on your way out, did you? On your way home? When you were leaving Matsue?
Yes, when we were leaving Matsue, but I think we must have gone on one other occasion just to see it. The Wasbys who hadn't been in Matsue and hadn't seen it gone. Well, perhaps it was two separate occasions, I can't remember. Perhaps this journalist was what she'd found. But I'm sure she was there. I think there must have been another visit.
Was there much in the way of clearing up going on? You know, during the time you were there, had they made attempts to clear it up, do you know?
Well, the bomb site, you mean?
Interesting you could drive on that bridge, isn't it?
Yes.
Which was only half there.
Yes.
That there wasn't a...
Yes, there must have been
barrier.
some clearing up done. Yes, how we got onto the bridge, because it was obviously not to be encouraged to get onto it. Let me see, August, September, October, November, December, January, February. Yes, it was 6 months after, wasn't it? We didn't go out there until March. But there was nothing very obvious that I remember. It was just desert. I should think they wouldn't... It would take them a long time to know where to start, really, or what facilities they had to do it.
Did you see other destruction in Japan, apart from Hiroshima?
I think there was some along the docks. And as I say, we were in accommodation that was on the waterfront because it was the Navy quarters. So, and they never got to Tokyo. Some of the people went to Tokyo. I don't remember there being much evidence otherwise. Nothing that struck me particularly.
How were you regarded by the Japanese? You know, bearing in mind your servants were behaving in the formal way to you, but you know, did you meet other Japanese, and I wonder how they regarded you?
We didn't meet other Japanese as in any social way, but must have been when we arrived, going and buying some flowers at a flower shop, and they were very thrilled, obviously, to sort of see us, and you know, there were English women, and this is what we looked like. And we had one girl who had a very blonde hair, a naturally blonde hair, and apparently in Japanese theatre, the goddess wears a blonde wig, and so they were all wanting to. They thought it was a wig, you know. They couldn't believe it, and could they touch her hair and so on. And it was that sort of level. But the women were much. I mean, they were fascinated by what did English women look like, you know. And of course, it was cold still, so we were wearing. You know, warm clothes. So, and we're uniform. And I think the idea of they saw us as women soldiers, I think, isn't quite.
Were you able to get enough food, you know, for your canteen and yourselves in Japan?
Yes, I don't remember there being any problem there. But maybe some of it came out with us in the boat, you see.
And were the troops kept separately, you know, the different nationalities? Were the Dorsets very much apart from the Americans in that area?
Well, we were there. They were the only, you know, it was divided up into units. I mean, the British would have this bit, and the Australians and so on would have. So in that sense, we were kept separate. The only thing I do remember was that no sooner had we arrived, it was a bit ironical. There were all these ships that needed unloading with stores and people. And the unloading was going on 24 hours. You know, they had the great big lights on in the docks and unloading. And the Japanese had gone on strike. The Japanese port workers had gone on strike, which struck me as 6 months after the war. That's a bit much, really. So that was when we met the Australians and New Zealanders. They were offloading, and they came and used our canteen, and they thought we did it on a rota basis, but we had the canteen open 24 hours.
And this was in Matsuri, was it? Would this have been Matsuri?
No, this was in whatever port it is.